Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Unplug It. 2 weeks left in the home and away season, and it feels like another season all of its own is going to begin very soon. There's obviously a lot of balls in the air when it comes to contracts, and lots of things floating around that we'll talk about over the course of this episode. 3 wins in a row, and in every one of those games, we could have lost with 30 seconds to play. Obviously, the Melbourne game, we were trailing with 8 seconds to play, and then obviously North, they had the ball inside 50 within a kick, and then obviously Richmond had the last shot at goal of the game and missed with a couple of minutes to go. But obviously, to get out of that and to get a bit of experience winning close games, a fair bit to work on through it. But winning culture is better for everything. H, as we welcome you in, that was a strange game. We'll talk about tactics and a few other things later, but we generally have owned Richmond the last few times we've played them. In the first 15 minutes of the game, it looked like that was going to happen again. It looked like they were a bit off. We were a bit slicker. Kicked three in the first 15 minutes, probably 20 points up. Thought it was going to be a bit of a picnic and probably lucky to win in the end.
Yeah, it was quite an ordinary game. It's certainly not one that I'd be saying to any fan, go out and watch again or anything like that. It'll be poor Jack Steele will have to sit through it when he wants to look focus back on his milestone games, and there'll be one to certainly get a bottle of something out of the drink and while he's watching it. And yeah, it's a it's not a lot to talk about this game except for yeah, we kind of half showed up and just kind of had did what we had to do, and there wasn't a lot of I guess trying to put a team to disorder or anything, or it was just a round 23 snooze fest almost. It was quite an ordinary match, and one that I'd be like thinking that we probably should have had a better result than that and probably should have been able to put them away, but we just fell back into a couple of old habits again that we thought we'd seem to have got rid of a little bit, but they just seem to have crept back. And yeah, we're probably lucky to have got away with it. It was, I mean, if you would argue that a loss there wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world, it wouldn't have catapulted us into the top of the bottom 10 teams. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's a we can take any win over Richmond. We're happy to at this point and move on the next week. And yeah, hopefully can place a bit more attractive football against Essendon this week, because yeah, we don't want to sit through a Friday night where it's looking like that again.
We welcome Tim Rosner, has been a co-host before, welcoming back into the chair. Nick Splitter still battling the effects of COVID, which kept him out of action last week for us. So hopefully he'll be on the mend shortly, and obviously with the young fam as well. But Tim, we seem to have made a habit of, we don't do it every week, but producing a lot of wins that you can't really reflect back on. You win the game, you move on, and that's it. You don't watch it again. You don't. Unfortunately, we have a few of those that just literally go straight into the memory bank, and that's it.
Yeah, good to be here, guys. Obviously, not good that Nick's sick, and hopefully he gets better soon. But yeah, it's been a tough season in terms of even that the performances that we've got over the line. It's always been a hard watch for the majority of the game in most cases. And look, the one positive that we can take out of the last 3 weeks is we are finding ways to win in those close situations, be it from in front or behind. We seem to handle those situations well. We look like we have a plan. It doesn't look like sort of chaos late in games when some teams are trying to pinch it. We obviously saw against Melbourne a couple of, really structured plans late. Even in this game, I noticed a few things were put in place at stoppage and when the game got close. It was ugly. We found a way to win. I never want to watch it again. And yeah, look, at least we're finding a way to get over the line in those tight ones.
Yeah, I was looking at it. We took 151 marks, which is easily the most we've taken this year and the most in a couple of years. But we only took 12 inside 50 and we only took 7 contested. Now, we took more marks inside 50 than Richmond. But Richmond, I think they only took 100 marks of the game, 11 contested. I mean, they're probably on paper a tiny bit bigger. We know that's been an issue all year with lack of size and those sorts of things. But yeah, it feels like when we have an opportunity to take a game on, like Geelong, it's like if we play Geelong, we have a sniff that our pace might be influential, so we play quick. When we play Brisbane, in a lot of respects, we play slow and go back into our shell, and it doesn't work. Other sides that we take on, Collingwood, Sydney, sides like that, we seem to run. But then we get into contests like this one where it almost felt like there are two different types of St Kilda. There's the brave and the bold St Kilda, then there's a safe St Kilda, and we don't have the skills, I don't think, to sustain that sort of safe chip style of football, because eventually teams will press up, will make mistakes. And I don't know how you saw it, Tim, but it felt like for some reason, and I don't know why, we would have been apprehensive to attack against a side that we've beaten, what, four times in a row and is in the bottom two.
Yeah, look.
But for some reason we were.
Yeah, it was a really strange one, because the first sort of 8 to 10 minutes of the game, we were looking to switch the play quickly. We used Brad Hill on that open side a couple of times early, which is when he's at his best. Nass was getting a bit of attention early, so we sort of used other avenues like Sinclair. Windhager had a lot of the ball early, and we were moving it quite quickly, and we saw a couple of early goals, and it looked like it might have been a good watch for the rest of the game. And then we did just go back into that chip mode, which suits Richmond, because they've actually got a pretty solid back half when you allow them time to set up. The time that teams get a hold of them is when you actually get it in there quickly, change the angles, and don't allow someone like Vlosten to intercept constantly, and a couple of their young tools who intercept quite well. They're good at the down-the-line stuff. They're not so good when you shift the ball quickly and get it in there quickly. So it was a strange tactic after the first 8 to 10 minutes, and it certainly didn't work.
I do wonder, H. Ross spoke a little bit in the pressure about how he was bemused a bit by that. It's interesting because, you find it hard to believe that they would be instructed to do that. So you'd think that, what, are they just a bit cautious for whatever reason? I don't know.
Yeah, it's strange because we've seen that attacking run, especially from transitioning from defence to attack, and we've been one of the fast teams in doing so, and it's worked when we've done it. It's the kind of team that you would play that sort of attacking football against, because you think, well, if they do get it back, they're less likely than a Geelong or an Adelaide at the moment to get it back over your head and get down the field and score straight on you straight away. They're less likely to be able to do that. So it was almost the perfect opportunity to just try that run and gun and attack as hard as possible. And leave your opponent behind. And if it comes back over your head, get back. They're probably not going to hurt as much as a lot of other teams. And it's a good opportunity to practice that, I guess, transitioning from defence to attack back to defence again if it does happen. So it's a interesting one that we decided, or players between themselves decided, let's slow this down and control it. It was just a case of a lot of them wanting to seem to get their hand on the footy and just have a bit of a kick around. But we could have really put them to the gun and just gone all out attack, because a few times we did move the ball fast, we were ahead of them, and there was no catching us. And we'd basically do the chip, kick it in and kick it to a 3-on-1 their way or something. And it was just, it was quite frustrating at times. And you're thinking, well, we run that ball fast into the forward line and it's a 1-on-1, or we get a player one out, and it's, much, much better situation for us to go into the forward line, and the forward line conversion will be a whole lot better than what it turned out to be, because, we had plenty of entry, but not much result from all that entry, and it's time to start getting that conversion rate up. That's the major thing that we've struggled with for a few years, and we need to get it right, especially against teams like them.
I was just having a look at the stats from last time we played them in round 3, when we won by 82 points or whatever it was at Marvel. So there's only been one game this year where we had more possessions than we did on the weekend, and it was that game against Richmond. So they've been our top two possession games. They've been our top, I think this one was clearly number 1 for Marks. That one was number 3. But the last time we played them, we had 14 more inside 50s than we did in this game. And obviously we had something like 17 more scoring shots, or the fact I think it was 19 more scoring shots in that game. So those two, and we had about 70 more than them in that game, 60 more than them in this game. So fundamentally it was the same. It's just we were quicker and more explosive in that game and slower in this game. And I was talking to a Richmond fan after the game who's a mate of mine, and he was saying that how he felt watching it, that when we scored it came a little bit easier. We just didn't necessarily, you know, take them on as much. He felt that our goals were a tiny bit easier than theirs, which is probably right. We just didn't give ourselves enough opportunities. So, yeah, weird game, hard to watch because it felt like we could have done a significant amount more than that. It was the same against North. We dominated 2.5 quarters of that game and just couldn't put them away, which has been a problem forever. So, strange. But I guess the pleasing part was, you know, some of the efforts of Garcia and Boxall. I thought Taru was going to be the one, Tim, to get the nom, but he didn't. It went to Boxall, which is good. But it's interesting with Taru because I think if I'm doing the maths correctly, you have to either be under the age of 20 or play less than 10 games coming into a season in order to win a Rising Star, or no more than 10. Maybe he can play exactly 10. I don't know how many he's played, but does he have to miss?
He will play 10 if he plays every game.
Okay, so is it still eligible if he plays exactly 10?
I thought it was 10 or less and you're still eligible. I'd have to double check. Okay. I remember looking at the start about 4 or 5 weeks ago and thinking if he played every game, he still would be eligible. I wouldn't be playing him in the last game if it does take him over.
Correct. You'd think they'd give him a chance to clean it up next year. But, yeah, I'm surprised he didn't get the good on Boxall for getting the nom, but yeah, I'm actually surprised Tari didn't, given his performance.
Yeah, 10 or fewer.
10 or less. Yeah.
He was actually very stiff to not get the nom for a couple of reasons. Firstly, I thought he was one of the better players in the first quarter when the game was on the line. And then his one-on-one contest, which was like a 200-game veteran late in that last quarter, is probably the reason we won that game, because in the past when teams get over the back like that, we make body contact, we go to ground, or we somehow get beaten one-on-one, they run into an open goal and the rest is history. But he won that one-on-one contest, and almost with confidence or arrogance, he knew that he had him covered, got great body position, worked his opponent, you know, to the angle, and then saved the day. So I thought Boxall's last quarter was also the best part of his game. But, yeah, of the two, potentially they went the wrong way, but I'm pretty happy for Hugh to get the nom.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a fair enough result in the end, but hopefully, you know, Taro keeps putting his hand up. We'll wrap that game up with the votes. We'll talk some of the off-field stuff a bit later on. But I thought there were a few players. I thought at various stages, Wintager was best on ground. I thought at various stages, Sinclair was best on ground. And probably in the end agreed that Wilkie was. But I gave a vote to McRae, a vote to Sharman, took something like 12 marks. And as a forward, that's a bit different than some of the marks that were taken around the ground. Two to Nass, quiet early, but built into it really well, influential late. When I say quiet early, he probably had 6 in the first quarter, which for most people is fine. But two to Windhager. He had 24 in the first half, 8 in the second. That would be the only thing that stopped him being BOG, was just the contrast between those two. Sinclair, solid player the whole way through, kicked a big goal in the last quarter. And then two to Cal Wilkie, 29 possessions and 16 marks. Probably could have given him more votes than that, but that's where I landed. H, your 10?
Very similar. Gave the same players, two each. Wilkie, Sinclair, Windhager and Nazar. Didn't see a standout on the day. Windhager was probably on target to be the one that was going to do that early. Was just finding the ball with ease and going back the other way and defending at the same time, and just looked like the player that was going to give us the run on the day. And first half was probably some of the best football we've almost seen from him, but it just didn't quite have the run from the other players to go with him at times. So go on the McRae also, and one to Hughie Boxall, mainly not just with the nod for the Rising Star, but led us, didn't lead us, but 14 touches, nine contested possessions, which was only second to Jack Steele. The contested marks, he led us. The tackles, he was only behind Steele and Marshall. So, yeah, his output on the day, when you stack it up against the rest of the guys out there on the day, was quite good. So, deserved a vote, deserved the nom. And, yeah, it's a... I think I called him last week to on the... Jason Blake last week said I could see a lot coming along here from him, and yeah, he popped up this week and I'm able to give him a vote.
I was in a similar position that Brad Hill was my Jason Blake last week. I wanted to give it to him again but couldn't because I didn't want to do it 2 weeks in a row, but he was certainly up there. Tim, your votes?
Yeah, look, I gave one to Garcia, mostly because I like some of the stuff that he does moving away from stoppage. I liked the goal early in the game. I just think he does a few little things here and there that show you he's going to be a player. The one criticism is probably that he doesn't get the ball enough at this stage of his career. He probably needs to become a 25 possession player to be in that role. But I thought it was really good, and it was sort of a toss-up between him, Boxall, and a few others for that one vote. I also gave one to Windy, and I know it's less than what you guys gave. My reasoning behind that is I thought he was very important early, but none of his possessions sort of led to scoring chains. I think he was only involved in three or four scores for the entire game. And that's probably the one thing that sometimes does let him down is that finishing inside 50, that last kick. He's getting better with his decision-making. He's a lot better by foot than he was earlier in the season, but I still think there's a fair bit of upside for Windy in the coming years, hopefully for us. Two votes to Nass. I had one vote for Nass originally, and then I had a look through the stats, and we kicked 8 goals for the game, and he kicked or assisted 4 of them. So it's pretty hard to criticize what I thought was a down game because of some of the decisions he made. He tried to do a little bit too much at times, but he was still probably one of the most important players on the ground. He was involved in half of our goals. He's a superstar, and I think we just have crazy high standards for him now, and that's why we mark him a little bit harsher than the others. And then I gave 3 to Sinclair and Wilkie. I thought that was potentially the best game that Jack Sinclair's played for the season. He was the only one looking to create. It didn't always come off because there wasn't much sort of presenting up at him from halfback. I also liked when he went into the middle in the last quarter. He played that role that sort of Max Hall or Naz have been playing in the last quarters up until recently, and was really good. And then Wilkie, clearly one of the best two players on the ground for us, superstar, All-Australian lock. Frightening to think about our D50 without him. Not going to happen, though.
No, it's not. It's funny with Sinclair. He's one of those players that stands out in shit games. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but I mean that when the standard of a game is untidy, it's almost like you're watching the game with an element of frustration, and then the ball lands in his hands for a second and you're like, oh, sweet, we're good.
Yep.
And then it might bounce around somewhere else and it comes back to him. So, yeah, they stand out because you're like, oh, they'll make the good decision amidst all of the carnage that's sort of going on around him. And I think the pleasing thing for Hugo Garcia is I remember about 5 years ago thinking of that exact same thing about Jack Sinclair, thinking, oh, gee, he's a really nice user, but he only gets it 15 times. It'd be nice if he got a bit more of it. And clearly he does now. So, yeah, hopefully Hugo tracks in that direction. The Jason Blake Awards, I ended up giving it to a guy who, so clearly he started the season unbelievably well, was All-Australian probably at the halfway point of the year, then had a really flat 6 weeks or thereabouts. His last month has been back to that sharpness again. He kicked a couple of tidy goals against against Geelong. It was hugely influential in the win over Melbourne. We know Nass kicked 4, but Higo kicked 4 as well in that game. Then I thought he was decent against North. And then, you know, even the 2 goals he kicked in this game were real polish in a game that didn't have a lot of that, the round the body and then the long set shot from outside 50. So I think, yeah, Jack Higgins, he's thankfully finishing the season the way he started it, which he deserved to do. I didn't want it to just fade away for him. Tim, your Jason Blake?
Yeah, I went for Max Hall, mostly because he's had a little bit of the Jason Blakes about him this year because he's sort of been asked to be a clearance mid, a small forward, the inside 50 sort of connector player, a pressure small forward. He's asked to be many roles and often many roles within a game, and I just think He's not a super prolific, you know, 25 possession midfielder yet. I do like the balance of forward mid at the moment. I think it might swing a little bit the other way, so 60-40 midfield going forward, but we just don't have the options in the forward 50 that can score, set up goals. He's probably the cleanest player, makes the best decisions, you know, going inside 50, outside of maybe Naz. So I just think he's been asked to fill three or four roles in his first proper season of AFL and done it really well.
Yeah, he's been super. H, your Jason Blake this week?
Yeah, you gave him a vote. I teetered on the edge of giving him one, but Cooper Sharman, as you're saying, he had the 11 marks. He's kicked two goals, but just on the day when I was watching, I didn't feel like he'd had the ball that much. It didn't feel like a game where I'm going, oh, wow, he's had 11 marks. He's kicked two goals, which is a quarter of our goals on the day and led the way up forward or anything like that. I felt like I saw him for the two goals and it felt like about it. But when you go back and you look at the stats after the game, that sort of stuff, and you sort of go back at a couple of points and go, okay, yeah, a little bit more influence than I realised right at the time. So, yeah, I couldn't sneak him in for an actual vote, but that's basically where I'll have to sort of put his apology to and dropping him in here.
He can keep the floor with the Shannon Knoll Award. I think you kind of alluded to it earlier on in the piece. That,
pretty much as you were saying with the last couple of weeks with Richmond and North, and we have this amazing ability to fall to the level of these lower teams at times. We can look magnificent against a Geelong and like for say about 2.5 quarters, 3 quarters, where I mean, they were clearly better than us on the day, but we showed some really good signs that day and played some really good football. And then, obviously, a massive quarter against Melbourne. Well, pretty ordinary for 3 quarters before that. North was pretty average all day. Wasn't great. This week wasn't great. It's just weird. We can play some great football against these better teams and then show up against these lower sides and just go away from what we're doing. Not sure whether it's a bit on the opponent, but you wouldn't think that their ability to drag us down that well compared to like what a top team would do. So I'd just like to see us play some of that football like we did against a Geelong or a Hawthorn or a Collingwood and play it against one of these teams. Like, let's do it this week. Let's play that brand of football against Essendon and just blow them off the park. Let's not fall into their trap, fall into their scrappy, crappy, nothing football and play our game and really put them away, because it'd be nice to actually, be nice to send all their fans home nice and early this week.
Yeah, and clearly they're a bit of a carcass to feast on. They've got a lot of players out, but we'll talk about that. Tim, your Shannon Knoll?
Yeah, look, mine's probably a little bit harsh and there might be a few out there that aren't happy with this one. But for me, Liam Stocker, I actually think since he's come back into the side in the last few weeks, there's sort of been signs where he isn't doing the things that he's really good at, and he's also not executing the things that he's usually poor at. So we don't expect Liam Stocker to be the best kick in the world. We don't expect him to be the fastest player on the field, but usually things like tackling, defensive efforts, pressure, they're sort of his bread and butter. I think he's been a little bit off in the last few weeks and it's pretty harsh, but I just want to see a little bit more from him, because if he's not doing those things well, I'm not convinced there's a place in our best 22. He has to be that number one pressure, defensive, tackling, spoiling defender for us. So just maybe a little bit of a lift for Liam Stocker.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He's a real barometer. He's been described by a few people as kind of like the Aaron Hamill of this era. Not the same player, doesn't play forward, but that kind of tough heart and soul. But you need that to work. Without that, then, you know, there's not as much left. Mine's slightly different. It's kind of the opposite this week. Obviously, you can give it to a few when you've had a flat performance like that, but it's just been, we'll discuss it a bit later on, but it's obviously been a chaotic week or a chaotic few weeks in many respects. Look, it's obvious when your best player is out of contract in the NAS situation, that's going to be a talking point. But I think we need to remember, and I'm in a Saints chat group, that, you know, I think we've all gone a little bit I don't know, mental, for want of a better expression, in the last few weeks. And that applies to everybody, to media covering us, to fans as well. And I kind of listed this as a Tay-Tay reference, in the sense that, so Shannon Knoll, the reason why it's called the Shannon Knoll Award is because he had that hit song Lift, and it's Who Needs to Lift. Well, I think it was Taylor Swift that had that song. Is it You Need to Calm Down? Is that her song? I think it is.
You're asking the wrong person.
So, yeah, I think we just need to relax. I mean, we haven't had text messages coming out with a picture from training which looked like it had CJ from Hawthorn floating around in it, and then people are like, is he touring St Kilda already? And then you had journalists messaging St Kilda, and St Kilda going, no, that's his cousin, don't worry about it. Like, even jumping at that type of stuff. And then, obviously, you've had all the stuff come out of South Australia. Now, there's an element of truth in some things, but they're never necessarily as big as they are. So take Marcus Windhager. Yes, that's a worry, because I think we were a tiny bit asleep when it came to that. We offered him something that was a little bit unders, then the Giants have gone, oh, hello, and then they've popped in, and now we've obviously got some work to do to make that happen, but everyone's adults, try to get it sorted. The Nash thing, obviously try to get that sorted. Cal Wilkie, you know, he's probably going to be the captain of the club next year, you would think, or soon. If he's got issues with list management, again, that's fine. I would hope that it wouldn't be a case that his manager would go and tell journos, which it appears is what happens. I'm not sure Kel would be pleased with that. We didn't need that unsettling business at this time of the year when we're trying to sign Nass. Kel will be fine. You know, he's a senior leader in the group. I'm sure he'll chat to the other senior leaders. And people have got to remember that contracts can be renegotiated. If Kel Wilkie is appointed captain, I'm sure they'll change aspects of his contract, be it length or price and those sorts of things. And at the same time, if we are going to calm down, I think certain senior players or other players, if they've got an issue with list management, need to ask themselves a question. Do you want to finish 14th every year, or are you happy for us to recruit players and actually get better? Do you reckon Geelong have got Max Holmes and other players sitting there going, you know, I'm pretty good, why are you getting Bailey Smith? You know, you're paying him more than me, what's going on? Now, I think everybody's got to be a little bit more mature and sensible and go, yep, it's that people are going to write stuff, people are going to say stuff. Let's just be grown-ups and not jump at every shadow. We can't do anything about it from our end anyway. I just think we've probably reached a point, Tim, where we're panicking at, you know, we're reacting to every single little thing that gets said. We just got to let it ride.
Yeah, look, I think the reason we're panicking is this is the most important off-season that we've had in a long, long time, probably 20 years. It's going to go one of two ways. If we manage to retain Nass, retain Windhager, pick up a couple of the players that we've been linked to, if all of that comes off, I think we are potentially challenging for a premiership in a couple of years' time. Doesn't mean we're going to win one, but at least we're going to have an opportunity to push into the top eight, maybe the top four. If it goes the other way, where we miss out on a couple of these players, lose Nass and Windy, then it's almost disaster zone, you know.
Yeah.
Start again, just 3-4 years away from even thinking about competing for finals. So it sort of reminds me of when we acquired sort of Fraser Gehrig and Aaron Hamill and that era, where we still retained some of our younger players. It took a couple more years and then we started challenging. If we can pull off everything that we're trying to in this offseason, I think that we're on the right track. It'll relies on Nass staying, though. If we're being brutally honest, he has to be at the football club if we're going to be a serious contender in sort of 2 years' time.
Yeah, and you tie Nass into Windy, their mates, they live together. How much does one influence the other? Even little things where it's... If a player had an issue with somebody being recruited, is a club obligated to discuss that with the player? I don't think so, necessarily. H, I don't know where you sit on that. Where is the list management able to just come and sit there and say, we need a bit of height, this is what we're going to do, rather than saying, oh, hey, you play this position, we're going to recruit someone else alongside you, how do you feel about it?
Bit of column A, column B. They've got to be open with what we're looking at and what's happening and where we're all trying to go. It's a team effort. You can't have the players all in one place, the team managers, the coaches, whatever, off in another place and doing other things and that. They've all got to come together. They all got to know, I guess, that old saying, the common goal. That we got to know where we're traveling, what we're doing, how it's happening, how it's how it's going to be done. And yeah, it's, do we need this? Do we need that? What, where do we need to improve? It's something that everyone needs to know what we're aiming for and what we need to do that. So yeah, there's a good call for it to be open season and going, okay, where do you see this player fitting into here? Or can we get someone who will fill this role? Or just being able to, yeah, basically be open about it all and try and find what the answer is to the solution or to the questions that they might have of, yeah, what do we need? What is going to fix that? Or what is going to improve this? Or, yeah, it's definitely something that should be discussed, and you would assume it does. So, yeah, let's hope that there is that common goal and everyone's happy. And that's basically what they're trying to figure out at the moment, of what makes them all happy and what makes them put pen to paper.
I don't think I don't think players should have to be involved in list management decisions, but I think if you have an overall strategy that you're working towards, I think it's pretty important to have the senior leaders on the same page. So if there is an element of truth in what we've heard in the last couple of days, and I'm not saying there is or isn't, I'd be very surprised if the club haven't run their future plans for the next 12, 24, 36 months by the leadership group of, you know, even Steele, Wilkie especially, and those, because you need your senior leaders to buy into the strategy, because that's going to feed down to the younger players like Windhager and Naz to keep them at the club. So I don't think you necessarily say, hey, is it okay if we go spend 1.7 on Tom De Koning? But I think you do say, look, we're looking at bringing in this type of player, this type of player, this type of player. This is why, and this is what we're building towards.
Yeah, the other ones that come, a couple of the telling ones, I know Ross Lyon, we're recording this on a Tuesday, he's set to be on Footy Classified this evening. We haven't heard that yet, but by the time you listen to this podcast, it would have already happened. So, yeah, that'll be curious to see whether he addresses much of that. But I thought, yeah, Nick Riewoldt yesterday, it was interesting when Sam Edmund was breaking the story around Cal Wilkie, and I like Sam, but Caro naturally defended the journo, saying, you know, I believe that story. And then they looked at Rue, and I think Rue said, I believe my contacts at St Kilda, and I think Rue would have a few of those. So I would, yeah, I thought that was quite pointed that he was kind of making it clear that, you know, I trust what I hear out of the club as somebody who could pick up the phone probably to anybody and get that information. And an example where we do need to absolutely calm down, I saw an exclusive that was on SEN or Channel 7 or somewhere the other day, that Gil McLachlan was spotted speaking to Nass after the game against Richmond. I'm like, fuck me. I mean, that's an exclusive. A Saints fan who is no longer the president of the CEO of the league talking to a St Kilda player after a game. Now, yeah, sure, I hope that he would have some level of influence, but he doesn't work for us or the league. So what vested interest would that possibly have in anything?
He'd be like us. He's a supporter. He's saying, come on, Nasby, stay. And that's about as far as he can go. He's probably a bit more powerful than any of us, but
hopefully offered him a few homes on the side post-career.
Hopefully. But yeah,
a couple of tickets to the polo, that'll do it.
That exclusive might as well have been Nas chose the apple crumble muffin, not the orange and poppy seed when he got his coffee in the morning. Like, it doesn't really matter.
Well, I was just going to say, wasn't Hulk in the change rooms like 2 weeks ago or something? Was he talking to all the players as well? So, Eric Banner.
So he'd have some
role for Naz in a movie somewhere.
Seems to be a lot of people interested in an irrelevant club lately.
Mm. Well, exactly right.
It seems to be that only we're the only one talking to any players at the moment. And what's happened to all the other players? Well, every year we usually hear about four or five going to Geelong. We haven't heard one yet, except tagging onto us. Oh, if we get this player, Marshall's going to go to Geelong. And that's the only thing we've ever heard. It's only been players that would be leaving us to go somewhere else. But it's all the players that were coming to us. At the moment, we'll need a list of about 83 next year. So,
and a $25 million offer for Harley Reid, it'd be like, Jeremy Cameron's out of contract. St Kilda offered him $75 million. Let's just throw any old number out there. Like, it's just
to be honest, it would be negligent of us to not inquire about Harley Reid.
Oh, exactly.
But I mean, I'd be very surprised if we've offered him $25 million. But you never know. Unless we borrowed some of Geelong's bottom salary cap.
I think where a lot of these numbers come from is like a lot of the time you hear a total number, but what's happened is there's like, oh, yeah, it's a 2.5 for the first year or something. And then it's front loaded. And someone's gone, oh, 2.5 over 10, oh, 25 million, whatever. And it's like, no, it's probably only going to be about 12 or fall up or something. Yeah. So, it's just, not doing the calculations of probably what is the actual case.
Yeah.
Before we look at Essendon, I guess the other saying is that if it, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And if you look at people in South Australia now, This is why I guess the Wilkie one's annoying, because if his manager has leaked that, it's bad timing for the club in terms of that, because journalists are going to pounce on it. But so Michelangelo Rucci, again, not a bad fella, but he's a passionate Port Adelaide supporter and he actually is employed by the club. There's no question about that. It's on his LinkedIn. He makes no secret of it. He'll tell you all the time. It's all over his socials. Is it convenient that a pro Port Adelaide South Australian media writing stories to potentially destabilise a club when that club's best player is tossing up whether he plays for St Kilda or Port Adelaide? It's convenient, I would think, that that's coming up at this point in time, that someone's trying to shake the foundations of a club and maybe tip the ledger back their way. So, yeah, I'm not sure that's the most professional thing I've ever seen, but still, so...
I guess if we had the opportunity to have a journalist help us get one of the best players in the competition, we'd probably be happy with it on our end. So I'm sure Port supporters are reasonably happy with what's going on over there at the moment.
Yeah, I'm sure they're pleased to have an advocate in that sense. But we look to Essendon. As we said, they've been smashed apart by injury. They lose Zach Merritt, who's been their best player for a while now. Dylan Scheel got suspended eventually for the incident from last week. They'll probably get Langford back. I think he played VFL last week. But I'm pretty sure they've either got 24 or 25 to pick from. In saying that, Tim, they showed a bit of spirit against the Cats, and they have at times. I mean, they're not turning their toes up. They have been belted a few times, but they are having a bit of a dip. It's probably the only credit I would ever give to Essendon on this podcast. But... look, yeah, we really should be feasting on that if we were fair income.
Yeah, look, they've been reasonably good the last couple of weeks, to be honest, considering how undermanned they've been. Losing Merritt is massive. He's probably one of their very few class players. They haven't won since May, so it would be very St Kilda to find a way to lose to them. But I just can't see it happening. The one thing... that I'm pretty comfortable with is that we're going to bring effort. We don't always bring game style. We don't always bring attacking, free-flowing football in the forward half. I think a lot of our half-back stuff is good. It's the forward 50 connect stuff that's an issue. I think we're going to score enough to beat them. I think it's only going to take 10 goals to beat them. Hopefully it's a little bit more comfortable than that, though, this weekend.
Hey, Chetty, I just hope it's not a grind, if that makes sense.
It's either going to be like what we saw last week or an absolute blowout. We could win this by 20 points or 20 goals. It's one of those sort of games that we could just absolutely turn it on and see some of the best footy we've played all year. We saved it for about this time last year against Geelong, and that was probably the start of it, or one of the better ones at that time of year. And they've just about switched off. I mean, they've still got three games left as opposed to us with two. And I'm not expecting them to be. We'll probably see the effort and that sort of thing from them, and they'll throw it a lot at us as much as they can. But I can see it dropping off, and we can try and control the game and just run and gun as like we're hoping to see the last couple of weeks. And I think they're well and truly thinking about the after after party after the Gold Coast game in a couple of weeks' time, the perfect season ending for them. They'll be probably bottles cracked at half time there in that match, I'm assuming. So they'll be there. Yeah, it'd be nice to try and finish off our Victorian season with a nice big one.
Yeah, you think that obviously Peter Wright can be dangerous, Kako can be dangerous, and Langford can obviously play, but he's had an injury-interrupted campaign. I mean, their most influential players on their list are clearly Merritt, injured Martin, injured Draper, injured, you know, a number of others that are unavailable for them as well. Caddy's shown a bit, he's out too. So, I mean, there's bits and pieces there, but obviously it's going to take a fair effort from them to pinch one in the last few weeks with the personnel that they have unavailable. In terms of changes, obviously Paddy Dow was pressing for a game, but rotten luck for him with the collarbone. The interesting one, Tim, is that so Max Heath was subbed before half time. At VFL level, you had Keeler make his return and he was okay. But you also had Dodson get 31 possessions and 41 hitouts. And if you look at the month that he's put together, I wonder whether... I mean, he's clearly a long-term prospect and looks a very good prospect, so there's no rush. But would they be tempted to throw him again?
Look, I think it's an outside chance. I think if they did it, he would have to play sort of 50, 60% ruck with a lot more Marshall forward, which is an option. My gut feel is that they're not going to go down that path. I think if they decide not to play Max Heath this week, that they'll probably look to bring in maybe Hasty again and shift things around in that regard, or even maybe Carroll, who was pretty good on the weekend as well, shot. But they're the only three that are probably in contention are Dodson, Hasty and Carroll. Toby's been decent, but probably still needs to put together, you know, a couple of games this season and a couple early next season to start pressing for best 22. I have a feeling that they're just going to go shorter and just bring in someone like Hasty or Carroll, and Heath will go back to the VFL.
Similar to what they did against Melbourne, where Heath didn't play, then obviously came back against North. But can you see them doing anything else? Barrett, I think they threw him forward, but that's a project for going forward. And there's probably no point on Cordy, really. Might as well persist with what you have. So,
I think I actually called that the Dodson one would probably happen at some point a couple of weeks ago, saying he was looking like pushing for that position. And when Heath went out, I was surprised that he wasn't then brought in that game. So, it's worth doing. Give it a go. But basically, let's see what we've got now. Let's have a crack at it, because he's been showing the numbers. And I don't see why we wouldn't. Is Barrett is he worth having a shot now and or hold on to next season now? Or do we really want to mix up what we've got out there more? Is there anyone that we need to rest, or we go, okay, Jones, that's enough for the year now? They're probably the only real options that we're probably looking at, but like Trevallia possibly back as an option. But yeah, Dodson's probably the one that I would probably like to see the most, because the numbers he's putting up, that's well worth saying you deserve a call up. So, and it's just a kind of player you think, well, that is our future. That's who, when Marshall does eventually move on, will probably take that role.
Well, that's right. And then it makes it interesting with the De Koning thing as well, with some of those guys coming forward as to how they want to look at that. A final one, we often look at list management of sorts at about this time of year. It's obviously a lot of players we hope don't play their last game in Victoria this week that we've mentioned a lot through this podcast, but... And this is not in any way begrudging, but Tim, do you think Zach Jones potentially plays his last game in Victoria this week? And that's, you know, he's been a good servant, so that's not a please get rid of him. It's just a feeling that might be the case. So.
I think it is time that we're going to move on from Zach. I'd still love him to sort of have a role with our new VFL team 100%. Next year. Yeah. I just think that's critical. He's not someone that's going to be best 22 next year, even if he was retained. So I feel like we want those depth players to be younger players like Toby, like Carroll, etc. So I think there's probably too many people ahead of him that are significantly younger than him to retain him on the list. I think there's a few others that are probably question marks, and then there's a few that we most likely will move on. It's a shame that Ryan Burns got injured for the last few weeks of the season, because he was probably one that needed to have a perfect final month to, you know, eke out another contract. So he's probably going to be in limbo, but he's another one that if he doesn't get picked up elsewhere would be great at VFL level just from a pure work rate. He's not someone that you can ever question endeavour. It's more about a little bit of execution and where he fits in once we are challenging for a flag. Ari Schoenmaker is going to be a tough decision. He's clearly got size. He's clearly got a weapon. What else does he have? After 2 years, we haven't seen probably other strings to his bow yet. Do we persist for another year or two to see if there is something else there? I'm not sure. I think he's probably one that's going to potentially...
He can't defend, unfortunately. That's his biggest issue.
Yeah, and that's something that I was hoping that he could learn, or we switched him into another role sooner to give him an opportunity to learn something else. We did have a look at him on the wing, but you still have to be able to defend on the wing, so that's the other issue there. Gus McLennan is a tough one. He sort of got a little bit of a go. He was okay the first time he came in a year or so ago, I think it was.
Last year, yeah.
Struggled a bit more this year. It feels like that was a show us what you've got. Do you want to, you know, is there a spot on the list for you? I think it's going to be hard for him to keep his place on the list. And then the two question marks that I have outside of those four are probably Max Heath, which I think is completely dependent on assuming we get TDK and Rowe stays. If both,
because Boyd will go.
Yep.
And then yeah.
So for in my opinion, if Rowe stays, it's hard for Heath to be on the list. If Rowe goes, there's potentially still that spot for him as the, you know, the second backup.
Given Keeler and Dodson are there, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the other one that is a question mark is probably Jimmy Webster, and it's not because he hasn't played good football at times this year. It's more about is he best 22. Does he want to look for an opportunity elsewhere? Is he someone you want to keep around just for the VFL team? I think he's probably got another year in him, but is another year in him of benefit to us instead of playing a Hasty, instead of playing someone else? So they're probably the six that come to mind about whether they're going to be on the list next year. They've most of them have had, you know, a reasonable crack at it and had a chance in the ones this year. So you can't really say that they haven't had an opportunity to show what they've got.
Agreed, H. Any of those that you think do or don't belong in that list?
No, that's pretty good. Yeah, it's probably gonna be a couple of tough decisions when you look at it as to what happens. I'm trying to remember: has there been any confirmation of a slight extension to our list when we do take our own VFL team on now, or has that been confirmed?
In terms of, you obviously have access to a host of top-up players. It wouldn't be bigger in terms of what we could use at senior level.
But I wasn't sure if there was a couple of, the old, I guess, supplementary sort of players that were allowed to be on our list, but it was kind of a rookie players that weren't on the senior list, but they were part of the list.
Yeah, I know in the VFL they have the 23rd player rule, whether you have certain allocated, I think they have to be a first-year player or something, so... Whether that's something that we could use out of our academy or something.
Probably a few players that would be able to slip into that sort of positions. There's a host of players we could slip into that sort of area at the moment. So, it's all going to come down to how many, I guess, if we have anyone to go, I'm retiring, or who would be on that area?
Well, Jones is probably 40. Could be the other one that...
Yeah. Cordy and Jones are probably the two that are probably at the top of the potential retirement list. You'd think Howard's probably not going to say, I'm retiring. He'd probably have to be told, let go, rather than saying I'm leaving.
This may or may not be controversial, but Dan Butler, where do we sit on that?
He's probably right in that cusp, right in that area of if we need to make a change, then he could possibly be. But yeah, there's probably a couple of ahead of him, as we've said. So
depends on his body too. Yeah.
I mean that the injury cop, that's a freak injury. That's not going to be one that's not no fault of his. That one. Or
whereas Webster would be more of an issue because it's soft tissue and calf at that exactly. age.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what does happen, whether any player does put their hand up or not. But I mean, there's no standout in that position at the moment. That it's definitely going to happen, and then we've had no announcements. So there's going to be a couple of tough calls there to say sorry, we haven't got a spot for you.
Most definitely, yeah. We will look ahead to Friday night footy. We're only on Friday night because Essendon are there and they get all of them. So, but we'll take the opportunity to play on that stage. And then obviously the season ends the following Sunday against the Giants. And it'd be nice to claim a scalp this week and then, you know, have a crack at 5 in a row to finish the season the other week after that. But thanks for tuning in. Obviously, there'll be a fair bit to come out of Ross Lyon on Footy Classified tonight. The AFLW girls in action this week as well. That'll be a focus over the next few weeks. Taking on the Crows, we've had a fairly soft start, I guess, in recent years. We played Sydney in their first ever game, and last year a couple of relatively lesser sides in the first part of the year. This is not the case. The Crows clearly one of the more powerful sides. So hopefully at Moorabbin we can put a good foot forward and build a bit of momentum to start the season. So good luck to them. I think injury-wise they're not looking too bad by comparison. So, the footy will roll on through that. So enjoy the weekend ahead. Go Saints.